I've finally grown up and I have a website, johnsavage.com/ what's your poison, and there's the whole guest list of all the artists that we've had so far, and the list is pretty stellar. I'm pretty proud of it. But please, I really ask you, it makes a big difference if you could, whether you're on Apple, whether you're on YouTube, whether you're on Spotify, subscribe. Hit that subscribe button. It really helps just get my rankings in the algorithm and keep the show alive. Coming up still in following weeks, we've got one of the biggest YouTubers in the country, Lesizwe, and I can't wait for you to hear that one. We've got Vion the Magician, who has 12 million followers on TikTok. He's in the top 200 TikTokers in the world. He's a lighty doing amazing stuff. We've got Burrito. We've got Good Luck. We've got DJ Lag to come and talk about the Will.i.am debacle, about Will.i.am stealing his music. Lots of amazing guests still coming up, but I really need that little subscribey scrub, or at least a comment out there. It would all mean a lot. All right, enough complaining. Let's start this. When I first started at 5FM, there were a very, very small handful of people that I really got on with well, or felt was very warm and inviting and welcoming, that were like my close team. The one was Kath Grenfell, and the other was Fixie. And Forbes and Fix have been an absolute institution at 5. They have consistently made some of the greatest radio. They are an incredible team with an incredible dynamic. I was fortunate enough to do Mash Lab with them, and I just loved working with them. And Fixie and I always had this other connection. We used to go and have coffee and like talk about how we're going to change the world and do all these things. And she is doing incredible things in the world. I think this interview is quite special, and I think you'll enjoy it, because when SABC people talk to other SABC people, they talk in a particular code, because they know how the infrastructure works and what's going on behind the scenes in a way that most human beings who don't work there don't know. And we just sort of jumped into the behind the scenes of 5FM and the SABC, and I think you might find it interesting, because I was quite raw about it, and Fixie met me right there. We spoke openly about what goes on there, not like in a tattletale way, but just in a very honest and open way. I really enjoyed the discussion about that, and it did go on. We spent a lot on the 5FM thing, and I thought it was actually cool. I thought I liked that part of the discussion. But more importantly, once you get beyond that and find out more about Fixie, where she comes from, what she's about, and what she's doing, man, this woman is going to change the world. Well, she is already. On that note, she has also created these amazing things that she'll talk about in this interview called African Affirmations. And I highly recommend that right now you go to africanaffirmations.org and buy a set. If you've got kids, or even just for yourself, they are really beautiful. I've just ordered a set for myself, and I really think that you should as well. And just support what this woman is doing. She is a powerhouse. And an awesome powerhouse at that. So without any further ado, I'm so excited that I get to connect with my friend and bring this episode of What's Your Poison with Fixie.
Hi!
Fixie!
Yay!
I'm sorry you had to fall asleep, and that I'm keeping you up way past your bedtime.
How crazy. And I did everything I possibly could to make sure that I was on time. I was like, okay, Malachi, it's 8:00. Let's make sure your boss in bed. We read 3 books. I got him to bed, and I am the one.
You read yourself to sleep.
Passing out.
Well, my kid decided that he needed a poo at 9:00. That's why I was a few minutes late.
No. Oh, no. I am sorry. I'm sorry that my background is also really crappy, because was not ready.
Hello, Fixie. It's lovely to see your face.
Oh, it is so lovely to see yours, John. Like, this just makes my heart smile. Let me like this.
I'm glad we got this together.
Me too. Me too. With sleep and all of that jazz involved, but we made it work. Your adulting is hard.
Adulting, yeah. Well, we'll get into this. First, let me ask you, what is your drink of choice over there?
I'm having a glass of red wine. This is the reason why I fell asleep, by the way. I peaked too early.
You're out of practice, kiddo.
I know.
You have to remember how to be a grown-up again.
I know. But like, you know what? It's absolutely fine. I'm back on it. So cheers to you, my friend, John. It is good to
see you.
Cheers
to you. And lovely
oh,
to
I love
see
it.
You. Amazing.
Oh. Mm. Mm. You are flourishing. What?
I see they gave you the boot, old 5FM.
Well, listen, it was bound to happen at some point. But I don't know per se if I should say they gave me the boot, because it was something that I had been wanting to do, honestly, for about 3 years. I believe that having your radio career is kind of like growing a business. You start it, you grow, you scale, and then you kind of reach this peak where it is, it's beautiful and it's great and your listeners know all about you. And then you kind of, not, I don't want to say plateau, but you kind of just find this like way where you're like, okay, what's next? And I think when you start reaching that level, there needs to be a reinvention. You have to reinvent yourself or reinvent the show in so many ways. And I think we had done all the reinventing we possibly could with the show. And you can't, my personal opinion, you cannot be having over 40 to 50 year olds on a youth radio station, because like you remember who the target market is at the end of the day. So it's not an easy thing for a radio DJ to actually say to themselves, you know what? What is the end goal here? For the listener, what am I doing the job that I need to do? Am I making sense for the market that we continue that we've been given? So
I'm going to ask you just a brutal question, but you say that you feel that your career in radio plateaued, but when I was there, it was a while ago. What is five? Is it not 5FM that is sort of that? It feels to me, you know. Mm-hmm. I know this is probably old news, but you know, I was a big 5FM fan. It was a dream to work at 5, but I don't know who the fuck 5FM is anymore, or who they think they are, or what they're doing. It's so confusing. It doesn't make any sense to me. That it's not listenable to me anymore, and that makes me really sad. Because I feel some days I wake up and go, I wish they would just give the station to someone who knew what to do with it.
Who knows what they're doing with it. I know. And being part of the SABC has been very difficult for us over the past couple of years. And the guy who really, really triggered the entire 5FM was Saudi, and the policies that he put in place while he was there, and these extreme policies that really hurt us from the core, because we're a music station at the end of the day, and we're out there to play what we deem as the best music in the country. And we struggled with that kind of leadership, and no matter what, that leadership is going to trickle down to the on-air stuff at the end of the day. We can sit there smiling, pretending that the fire is not happening behind us, but eventually we're going to all get burned and get tired. And I think that is true. That is what happens at some point. And you either go, you know what, I did the things that I could possibly do and I'm tired of being charcoal and being burnt. I'm done. Or you kind of go, well, this is what we're dealing with. So you're right. There are outside factors that you can't really do anything about. And there's almost so much smiling that you can do on air without it actually really starting to affect you emotionally. And just eventually going,
okay, I'm done. Somebody else needs to handle this. Someone that has, that is younger and has more energy to fight this battle. But I will say one thing. Having left, Forbes and I both came to an agreement that whoever takes over the show, it better be a hot woman. A beautiful, black, hot woman that is just going to flip the normal all-male, white male idea of daytime radio on its head. We need, that was our biggest
I mean, I've got to say this.
Thankful.
I agree with you, but it's like, they should have done this 10 years ago or 5 years ago. What has been going on? It's like, I know. That's yeah, drink time.
You are 100%. You are 100% that. They should have done it ages ago. And it's almost like they were just too scared to do it, so they would maybe put one person
to lose their old, you see, their old audience got older, mm-hmm. and I think they were too scared to lose that older audience. They should have just slayed that. I mean, that audience they've lost anyway to 947, but they should have murdered that audience and attacked the youth audience full-fledged, because the 5FM brand's so cool. Well, was so cool.
Not even 947. I would say even to 947, to Jacaranda, to Hot 91.
YouTube.
Like, I see, to YouTube, Spotify, you name it. It all happened. Listen, you know, I'm not going to, 5FM will always be 5FM and have the youth market at the end of the day. Like, they're a youth radio station. They play the best commercial station. They're nationwide. There are a lot of pluses that they have that they've been able to nail within the industry. Our leadership has been pretty shitty. And that is what has really hurt us as a brand. Do I see a good revival at the moment? Kind of, yes. I think that we've got someone
turn it
at
around?
The top. I need to stop saying we. If that's also starting, it's becoming a new thing for me. because, I mean, I have been with the brand for 12 years, which is a freaking long time. Wow. So I do think that they do have the leadership to really turn it around. And one of the biggest things that they needed to do was get rid of a lot of people. And I say that, I mean, these are friends and colleagues of mine. So, and I'm one of the people that they got rid of, but I think that they really needed to start afresh. And this is what they are doing. It's not personal, but it needed to flip over. And so they've got a clean slate. They've got an opportunity to grow it. Let's see what they do with it. But I am positive of the leadership that they have. I don't know who else works at the SABC at the moment, because a lot of people have been gone. I would say 80% to 90% of people have left.
Metro, but also getting the job on the Metro side.
You know, onto the next chapter, and let's hope that fresh ideas, new ideas, and people who are just eager to really do well in radio and really give to radio.
Last question of five, and then I'll let it lie. Just
I know we could go on over. Yeah.
One of the things that's always really bugged me, like really upset me, and because I've seen it hurt a lot of people, and I've also am speaking to some of the what do you call them? The new outcasts of five, is the way they let DJs go, right? This sort of like 1 week's notice vibe, so that, you know, people don't realize this, and maybe maybe this is the unspoken thing about five, but SABC pays like shit. So it's not like the DJs are sitting there like they go to work because of their job. I'm telling you this at home, right? So to get fired with a week's notice is actually really tragic. It does not, and also because all the radio stations kind of align, you kind of don't have a chance to look for another job at another station. You've missed the thing. So it's really brutal and really unfair. And partially because I think they make everyone sign these freelance contracts, even if you're on there for 12 years, you get like a day's notice because there's some fear that you're going to go on air and like say something. And what are your thoughts on that? I just wanted to, because I know like I'm even Kath Grenfell back in the day, they just, you got the job, bye. Everyone's sitting there for like a month, like shivering. They don't know what to do or say or where to go or when they should be looking for a job or if they're getting a raise. It's pretty horrific. I find it really unforgivable.
What I really hate about that way of working is that it's so normal. It's basically, I'm going to compare it to like when women couldn't buy houses or buy anything without going to their husbands because their husbands were the only ones who could get credit cards or whatever. It really feels like an injustice like that because, and that was normal back then. Somebody would say, oh, just get your husband to do it. That's normal. Oh, if you get divorced, you're not going to be able to get that. So you'd probably just stay in the marriage and, you know, see what you have to do. The reason I'm comparing it to that is because it's so normal that that's what our bosses will say to us, that just so you remember, it's a yearly contract and you have to come back. You either going to get the chop or you may not get the chop, whether you've been here 5 years, 8 years, 10 years, 12 years, 30 years. Sureshni Ryder is a great example. She has served at the SABC, if I was him, for 18 years. 18 years. I mean,
1 week job. Boop.
And literally she had 1 to 2 weeks of notice. And I mean, it's not my story necessarily to tell, but I mean, she spoke about this on air herself, but it's brutal. It's hard and it should not be allowed. There needs to be some repercussions behind that. Well, these are our livelihoods at the end of the day. And you're right, we don't get paid a crazy amount of money because this is passion. It is passion. It is, you put your all into it. You put your personal finances into it, depending on how big you want to make your radio show. And how much you want to invest in your radio show. You bring in your sponsors, you bring in your networks. And that is what you do for not yourself, but for your listeners, who are the most important people. And I can't tell you how much I've invested in the Forbes and Fix show. Time, money, all of it. And yes, what I get paid does not even cover it. So I do think that there are some labor laws that need to be made. And the problem also is not the top. They've been doing it and they've made it normal. I also think the problem is us DJs not coming together and not actually creating a union per se by ourselves and saying, when are we going to stand together and say this is not right? Because I'm telling you now, some DJs have made contracts that made sense for them. And they were like, well, I signed a 5-year contract because I fought for it and I fought for an extra pay and I fought for medical aid and I fought for a few more benefits. And I think some radio DJs fight that on their personal basis. And that's why we're not there able to come through as a team because everybody's got their own separate negotiation at the end of the day. And we know nothing about it. Because we don't talk to each other.
There's two schools. I remember this clearly. There's the school of people. If you're a new DJ, if you're a new DJ, you come in on the startup salary, which is, I've never spoken about this before, and I'm sorry to have to do this here, but I'll tell you, this is what I remember. I always wanted to be on Five. When I got my contract from Five, I looked at it and it said, I can't remember the exact number. I think it was 330 Rand an hour or something. And
sounds about right.
I went to Catherine and I went like, surely this is a fucking joke. Like they're taking the piss. And she said, oh my God, how did you get such a high offer? Right. And my brain blew up because what I had never told anyone is that I told the 5FM, the station manager, that I was going to move to Cape Town at the time. And she said, if you move to Cape Town, we're not going to give you this job. But I did it anyway. And I flew myself to Cape Town, to Joburg, every week for my show. And wow. It cost me more to fly up and do my show than I was getting paid each week, which was crazy. But the reason I'm saying that is there were the two different schools were, if you were a new DJ, you get put on this basic and like every year you fight for a slight raise. But if you were like a fresh and they were poaching you from somewhere else, that's when you had some sort of negotiating power and you could demand some sort of salary. And I think that's where you're right. The DJs who had the good deal, it was not in their interest to unite with these guys who were on the sort of bottom salary stuff.
And it's hard because you can't put all your eggs in one basket, but they ask you to put your eggs in one basket. This is the thing.
You have to. You contractually can't do anything else.
This is it. So it does put you in such a tricky. And look now, there are three radio DJs that are able to do this from Cape Town now, because someone stood up and was like, "I'm not moving. I'm not moving to Cape Town. If you want me, then." Like, there's an SABC here, I'll broadcast from here. And they made it happen. And they made it happen with another one. And they made it happen with another one. And that's the thing is, I'm also very grateful. I always say COVID was such a blessing and a blessing in disguise. And a lot of things appeared from it. I never thought I could be doing most of my radio show in 1 year in the Eastern Cape. I'm currently in my mother's house in East London, and I'm doing my radio show from here for most of the year, and Brilliant. It still sounded awesome without Forbes. And fortunately, we've had so many years of experience that you can always hear when someone's about to start, or the synergy was still very, very close and very tight, and we could still keep our links very tight based on internet, that is. But that day, but we still managed so well, and we were, and I was just like, these guys have been lying to us. Like, these things are possible. These things are possible. Like why the limits that we put on, the limits that they've been put on us, these things need to change, but they are. Slowly but surely, they are. Because we see that they can be done, and we're just like, cool, make it happen. So, I just, like, if there's one thing, an advice that I would give for radio DJs is to actually start working together. Because you're working in silos, it's not for the betterment of everybody at the end of the day, and will continue to suffer.
I know I said I wouldn't say anything else about five, but I'm gonna.
It's fine. It's okay from my side.
It's related to what you're saying, because I think the one other thing, so, you know, Fixia, you not only one of my favorite people I've ever met in the world, but at 5FM, you were a shining light. Mm. We spent quite a bit of time together. We worked together. Mm. We used to have great meetings about changing the world together. Like, your energy is incredible. But
thank you.
The thing that was surprising to me at 5 when I got there, I thought this is the dream, right? Is that the culture of the DJs is super cuck, actually. And I don't think it's the DJ. I think the corporate culture is rotten to the core, and it makes like things like your job insecurity. And I'm not saying not everyone is mates and everyone's not nice to each other. I'm saying that you walked into that building, even when I was there, and it felt like I was walking into a graveyard, and the politics, like, no one wanted to help each other, really. No one was working together. It was all, and I blame that on the sort of top down. I don't know if it's fear or whatever is coming from the top into that space. It makes DJs generally very complainy. And that would really surprise me about 5. And I also just kind of got off into my own little lane and went, okay, well, this is how it works around here. I'm going to do my own thing and ignore everyone else, because that's what everyone else does.
You are great at just doing you. And I think that's what I've always loved about you, John, is that you're true to the core about what you do, your values, your constitution, and like, you're like, this sounds great. So I don't care what you guys think. I'm going to do it. And everyone's like, yeah. We're on it. I see what you're doing. And I feel like that's what you brought. You brought such a different dynamic to 5FM. And I think that we've had such geniuses. And I will call you a genius, my friend, whether you know it or not.
Get the wine talking there. Have another sip.
But I think that's the one thing I might disagree with you on to a certain degree. I've worked at MTV, at MTV Base, as an MTV DJ before I actually started at 5FM. The only reason I got onto 5FM was because we started a show, a radio meets TV show, where we did the TRL radio show. So it was TV. We'd come into 5FM, we'd do a chart show, broadcast it somewhere around the SABC, the best looking places in the SABC building, which was always hard to find at the time.
Either on the roof or in the studio downstairs, right?
And we had to get a whole production team to like make it look great. Some, most of the time there was green screen, but we would do that. And then I would do a link with Nicole Fox at the time.
I just want to say something, side note. Yes, I just got a call from Nicole Fox less than a week ago, who is living in Cape Town and wants to come and record a voiceover here. I mean, how mad is that you just brought that
up? Well, look at that. Look at life, eh?
All right, continue the story. It's just that you said that name and it just sparked something.
No, that's good though. And you should have a chat with her as well. I'd be so intrigued to hear her insight of Five back then. Oh, well, not necessarily Five, but radio, should I say, for females. Because I was one of the people sitting in my boarding school when I was in grade 11 and matric, listening to Nicole Fox and Leanne speak about the hottie of the day in the evening, on her evening show. So, you know, like that's where my love for radio began. But anyway, going back to doing that with Nicole Fox, and I couldn't believe I was doing that. Someone I used to listen to when I was in high school, and we would do that, and we tried this dynamic, and then I got picked up by Five, and they were like, "Hey, you've never done radio before." I was meant to go to YFM, by the way, because I was in talks with them, and instead of going to YFM, 5FM would just like come and do a demo with us, did a demo with us, and they were like, great, you'll do Sunday night shows between 10 p.m. and 1 a.m.
Who was your station manager at the time?
Station manager, I think, if I'm not mistaken, I think she was acting at the time.
Was it Helen?
No, Helen was the station manager, you are right. I'm thinking of the program manager. It was after Nick. I think Nick had just left, and there was someone acting in his position. Long blonde hair. Gosh, I forgot her name. But she was there, and Helen was like, "Come on through." And I had great chats with Helen. Aisha also was marketing manager at the time. Aisha is also one of the people who pioneered, or should I say, spearheaded the Forbes and Fix show.
I loved her. She was amazing.
She will forever be my boss. I always say that. I still call her boss. And I had the opportunity of working with Aisha at MTV as well. When she left Five, she went to work at MTV. And then she went back to Five as station manager. So I've seen the dynamic of working at certain places. I mean, we all have in the media industry as a MTV-based DJ. And I will say that 5FM DJs, really, there's no energy like what I've felt with them, from our team builders to our events and whatever it might be. When we came together, there was this like energy of like euphoria of like everybody's personality was just on another level. And I found that there was some camaraderie around us.
It might have just been me. I'm an outsider, any room I'm in.
but I think also you going to Cape Town, going back and forth between Joburg and Cape Town was also not an easy thing for you. Because if we had events and we had DJ gigs, I mean, those were kind of our team builders whenever we did that. And that energy, there's nothing like it. I'm thankful to have been part of that. And we continue to do that. We keep finding great personalities to be on 5FM. So once again, am I worried really? No, because I think the personalities will definitely drive it to we'll drive it in the right direction and make it sound awesome. But your leadership has to be in the, not necessarily in the driving seat, but needs to be helping with the navigation at some point. And I think that was what was missing, and that could be, and I think they've got the leadership to do it. So this is just crossing fingers. It's just the SABC as a whole gets a bit
messy. Well, I will say, one thing I have to cheer, the mash lab with Forbes and Fick was legendary. That was some really amazing radio we did together. I mean, it was hard work and really stressful, but it was radical.
This is the other genius part of you coming out, eh? And for those that never got to experience Mash Lab, man, the way you put it together, you're one of the only people I know that can really bring people together through music, no matter what background you're from. I saw you do it at the Summer, epically. And then I also see you do it with Mash Lab. And that is the content. That is the groundbreaking content that I'm so proud to have been part of because of the passion behind this. So I'm grateful for you.
I was motivated by revenge, I will tell you. I was determined to show 5FM that they were wrong to fire me. That's why I came in so hot. I went from, it was very funny, I went from being fired by the station to being their biggest client. And that was my that was my revenge.
and you did well. You did well. It's always so hard because I had to learn from an early age that these places that we go and work at are not going to be your be all and end all. Yes, you're put on an awesome platform, but the real light is not them. The real light is you. So like they're part of that journey of the amazing shit you're going to do later on. And like I loved your radio show. I mean, we spoke about it many a time. But for me, what I saw you do on other platforms, I'm like, damn, no one else is doing that. No one else is doing that well. So, you know, it's part of a platform to help you out with everything as well. So don't be too hard on yourself. I don't even see it like that. I was just like, this guy keeps thriving and he keeps going, and that's the journey. The light's within, man. It's not at a station.
You're very sweet and all.
Sorry.
let's move. You were talking about the light within, and I like that because you know, we haven't really stayed in touch. As you know, back in the day we used to, I remember we had like great meetings, we always had plans, but I know you've had quite a tough sort of maybe 5 years personally, and but I've also seen you come out of it like a fucking ninja, and you're involved in all sorts of amazing things. You are pioneering and inspiring people all over the place. Tell me a bit about your life outside of Five.
All right, so I'm going to try to keep this one short.
Well, that's actually what I wanted to talk about. We've been stuck on 5FM for 30 minutes, and that was not my intention.
I know, but it forms such a big part of our history, so it's absolutely fine. Gosh, I went through a major change in my life. I think my son being born, his name is Malachi.
How old is Malachi?
Malachi is turning 4 in June, the 9th of June. He's a beautiful Gemini. And his name actually means messenger. And in so many ways, I'm always just like, Malachi was one hell of a messenger to me in terms of waking up. I kind of feel like I've been like the walking dead for the longest time. And as soon as he arrived in my life, I was like, hey, what am I doing? Who am I doing this for? What's the purpose behind all of this? And I had to really, you know, stop with the scattered energy that I was giving to everyone and receiving from anyone and just have focused energy on what I wanted. And that was a huge pivotal change for me. I went through a divorce, a very terrible divorce. And just being a single mom, being a career mom, trying to just hold my shit together, trying to hold my mental health together, trying to hold my family together, was me growing up and going, okay, so this is this life thing that they talk about. And even just my personality, just like I still have the core of fix and the core of me, of who I was, but I could feel the shift had happened already, even from an on-air perspective. I could feel that shift. So yeah, I think you enter the chapter of motherhood and you just want to create. That was my big thing. I was like, I just want to create stuff that matters now. And I got to do that. So I, alongside of being on radio, have always been big into social development. I've always been into entrepreneurship and mentorship and making sure that it's not only about me, but who's coming next, who's coming after. I gave the great example of at 5SM. I was like, cool, we're going. We've been given a year's heads up. And by the way, that was a big thing for us. We were given a year's heads up, myself and Paul.
I didn't know that.
I mean, what's so interesting is, oh, here we go, going back to 5FM. I'm so sorry. But it is a big part of everything, of fitting the puzzle everywhere. But we were given a year's notice because I had already showed concerns of we need to reinvent what we're doing here as a show, or we need to let go. And that was a personal choice, and that I started vocalizing a lot more already in 2019, 2020. And that's when they sat us down and go, okay, well, this is the case, unless you guys want to reinvent on your own path. And yeah, so I've known this was coming for a while, and I already started new plans and new projects in motion leading up towards 2021. So I started an organization called the Fix Scholarship, which that's where my heart lies. It's just giving opportunities to female entrepreneurs and social entrepreneurs. I did a course at the University of Pretoria, but they have a school called the Gordon Institute of Business Science. It's called the Gibbs School, and it's a great business school. Their MBA is like in the top 100 in the world. And I went and I did my social entrepreneurship course there. I loved the course so much. That was also a huge pivotal change in my life. And that's when I'm like, okay, I want to give opportunities for more women who want to create impact, who want to change, who are already doing things within their communities that are changing. I want to make sure that I give them opportunity to study, formalize their businesses and help them grow. That was a big thing that's a big thing of when Forbes and I left. I wanted to make sure whoever's coming to fill in has got to be someone that brings in a big difference to what we're doing here. We're struggling with women. We're struggling with women of color in daytime radio. These are the things, big shifts that need to happen. And that's why I'm so thankful for Zanele Potrella, who is taking over our show between 12 and 3 p.m. She is a firecracker. She is gorgeous. She is great at what she does. And she is passionate. Radio runs in her blood. And she has fought so hard to be there. And I think she is 100% the secret weapon at that radio station. She is a secret weapon. And I'm thankful for her, you know, like, so, man, when I see stuff like that happening, I go, I'm done here. I'm good. Because that's the whole thing. That's the whole thing. It's like, it's not about me. It's about what you're doing for the next people to come. And that was a shift that Malachi created in my life. The whole, like, why are you doing this? What's the purpose of this? What change do you want to see when you are gone? What's the journey here? I keep talking, okay. So please interrupt.
No, I love this stuff. I want to ask you, I've got quite a lot of things on my mind here. I'm just, where to start? The thing I wanted to ask is, in terms of the work that you're doing, to empower and inspire? What are you? I mean, you don't have to have an answer for this, but what is the practical ramification of that? Is it a school? How are you manifesting that into reality? Is my question.
All right. So how we've run with the Fix Scholarship over the past 9 years. So it's a registered and nonprofit company. And what we do is we open our application for women entrepreneurs on our website, fixscholarship.co.za. People apply to whatever the theme might be that year, saying we're looking for tech-enabled female social innovators, or we're looking for women who run organizations that focus on gender-based violence. Whatever the theme might be for that year, we put that out there. We work with our partners, engage with our stakeholders, if you want to put it that way, and they help us put those women through school. And the whole point of putting them through school is so that they can grow their businesses, because a lot of the times they're sitting with these businesses where they just saw a problem and they wanted to fix the problem. They were like, okay, this is the issue. There's not enough done with mental health with children. I want to create these affirmation cards. I'll get onto that because it's something that we did. I want to create these affirmation cards for women, for kids to and self-belief and to build their self-esteem. And we're going to start it, but I don't know how to run the day-to-day business of it. And what they do is they go to this business school, call it an incubator, if you must, and they actually put it down all on paper, theory and the practical of how to run a sustainable business at the end of the day. I really want to try to simplify it as much as possible. So that's what it is. I think that the art is so similar to social entrepreneurship because we don't value the arts like we should. And there's so many people in the art space, in the art sector. Well,
it's a great introduction to entrepreneurship.
That's it. Mm. My big passion, John, something that I got to go and study in the US is art entrepreneurship. There is no art entrepreneurship in South Africa. There's not one course that you can do here.
We've got a lot to talk about.
I've written a whole thesis on this. This is what my thesis was about. And I went to go study at Columbia College, Chicago in 2010 for 2 years to do this course because I was like, I want to run a successful business in the arts. That is the core of it. And then I kind of found myself in social entrepreneurship because there were bigger problems that I needed to solve.
I have a controversial opinion. If you don't, you can reject it entirely. But here, I mean, first of all, you're my hero. The stuff you're doing is so amazing, and I love you, and I love what you're doing. And the question I want to ask after this probably unwelcome interruption is, what help do you need, right? To further what you're doing. But one of the things I think is interesting to look at and why I love what you're saying, and there are projects that I'm working on that when we're done, I will tell you about because maybe there's some synergy. The cool thing about the arts, entrepreneurship in the arts, is that there is a very high incentive for people to engage with it because it seems cool, but you have to learn shit to get there. So if you want to be a rapper, it's not about rapping. It's actually about learning entrepreneurship. So it's like a nice gateway drug to entrepreneurship that is very open. And again, this is going to sound really terrible, and I shouldn't even put it out there. The problem with starting, in my opinion, the problem, even though I'm very, of the NGO based issues, the programs that really support problems in this country that really need to be solved, the problem with the entry point there is it's a very, you kind of need a lot of help. You need people to donate money. You need people to, you spend all your sort of effort trying to get the resources together to enter in that point. Whereas the other side creates self-sufficiency, and it leads into the helping the larger issues in a way more sort of organic way. So yeah. I almost feel like looking at the arts for entrepreneurship solves all the rest of the problems, or at least helps solving those other problems. Anyway, that's me, my speech done. I don't know why I even bothered to say that.
No, I love that you're saying, because what you're actually talking about is social entrepreneurship. And that is about creating a sustainable business at the end of the day. And not only focused on donations is what you're in essence saying, because that's what I've learned. Like, there's a difference between a charity NGO and an actual social enterprise. It doesn't necessarily have to be an NPO. The whole reason
we're speaking the same language.
We're speaking the same language. It's literally the difference. It's difference between like a for-profit company and a social enterprise is because for-profit is literally just bottom line. Not worried about anything else. It's just, let's make the mark. Let's make the profit. We've got, you know, we've got the benchmark of what we need to make. Whereas in social entrepreneurship, and art entrepreneurship falls very closely to social entrepreneurship, that's about what is the mission. Our mission is most important. What is the impact that we're creating here? But making sure that we're still afloat from a sustainable level doesn't mean you can't get paid. Doesn't mean you can't get paid a lot. You can get paid a lot for what you're doing there, but your bottom line is impact at the end of the day. How are you creating impact not only for the company, but for the people and your community around you? Because that must be the most important before all the capitalism in the world, basically, in a nutshell. So we're speaking.
I'm angry with you right now, because we should have been working together, or we have wasted a lot of years not being in touch.
Not wasted. It was just a timing thing. We needed to get to a certain stage. Like, I can't wait to tell you about the art entrepreneurship stuff that I have in mind, that I've been wanting to do, because it is such a big gap in this country. We only have workshops or once-off courses, or most programs. Like, even if you study when you study music, study radio, study fashion, study at AAA, what do? Film, broadcasting, Boston Media, you name it. All those schools that do all of that. Even Trenton, his school. I actually love what he's doing in Cape Town. I love what he's been doing. But all those schools are so focused on the practical of the curriculum. They will only give you a 6 month start a business course, like a crash course, right at the end of your 4-year degree or diploma or certificate of whatever you have. And that is not enough for an artist to really understand how to build a business. It is not enough. You're not equipping them. You're not speaking their language, because that was what I learned in the States. You speak the language of the artist, and that's how they get to know. Because we're all like, oh, maths. I couldn't do maths in high school. I couldn't do accounting in high school. And as soon as you start switching your brain off like that, there's no chance you're going to be able to balance your books, or there's no chance you're going to be able to run a business. That is running a business, no matter if it's in the music business, no matter if it's in the TV business, no matter where it is. If you want to be an entrepreneur, you're going to have to do it. But speak the language of the artist is what the trick is. That's stuff I love to do.
For those who are listening or watching this, by the time you see this, we'll be in business together, Fix and I. So just to let you know, this is where it happened right now. What do you think? What do you think? How do I ask this tactfully?
Don't be tactful.
What do you think was the biggest lesson you have learned about yourself going through a very hectic divorce and a bad relationship? What is the thing that you needed to overcome, or what do you think is the thing you needed to learn about yourself that you've taken forward?
Oof. to trust myself. I think that's the biggest lesson I've ever learned.
Were there warning signs that you were ignoring, or what did you not trust about yourself?
I think for anyone who has been in, and I'll blatantly put it out there, an abusive relationship and an emotional abusive relationship, which is not always easy when you don't see the marks and you don't realize that it's actually happening. But for anyone that's been in that kind of relationship, whether it's work, whether it is personal at home, your partner or family, your mother, your brother, whatever toxic relationship it could be, you chip away at someone's constitution. You chip away at someone's self-belief. You chip away at everything they thought they were doing, and they second guess themselves within everything that they think about. That's how you basically break a person. And I found myself in that situation, and it happens a lot. And I mean, John, you know me, I'm like happy-go-lucky, bubbly personality, just going through life like with the best intentions for everybody and anybody. And my mom always says to me, you know, Ntanam, it's such a blessing and a curse for you that you are this, like, have the best intentions for everyone and you see the best intentions. You always give someone the benefit of the doubt. I mean, Rob and Kim would say that on the show as well. They're like, oh, Six, like, this person's actually a very shit person. Like, you just have to come to the point that this person's a shit person.
We are so alike on this. We are so alike. Like, when people tell me, like, that dude's a dodgy fucker, I go, what, that guy? Really? Huh? I never even thought of that. And everybody knows. It's like, oh, I thought it was a bit weird, that's all. I'm like, I've got the same affliction, just so you know. But like you, I've had to learn to harden the fuck up and start listening to your own intuition, you know, because I ignored it my whole life.
That's it, John. That nail on the head there is that... because that's ingrained in you. That is your personality, and it's okay to have that. It's okay to be like that, but it is going to teach you freaking hard lessons on your way. That was my hard lesson that I had to learn, that no, not everyone has got your best intentions. What are you going to do about it? Are you going to close up? Are you not going to? Because I believe in laws of attraction at the end of the day also. So you start, because of that one heartbreak, you kind of just start closing up, but it's just not who I am. I had to go through that close up stage for the protection of myself and for my family. But with a lot of help, therapy wise as well, like my therapy has, like if anyone's going through hard times, go to therapy. Like, it will change your life. I'm an advocate for mental wellness, and no matter where you find it from or how you find it, as long as it's done in a professional way, go and do it, because it's almost like a life coach at the end of the day, where you go, you really can step back and go, what do I need to work on for myself to become a better person? Because once I'm a better person, my relationships are just much better. My relationship with my son, my relationship with my mother, my relationship with my friends, my colleagues, you name it, is so much better because I know what boundaries to put with who as well. And I know what
boundaries.
Red flags.
Learning red flags and boundaries. That's been the lesson of life, you know?
I need to read you this thing that I saw the other day, which is freaking hilarious if I can find it quick enough. But boundaries are key, bro. Like, that boundaries are gonna save your life. Here it is. Boundaries don't mean I don't love you. Boundaries mean I'm going to love you and love myself at the same time.
Nice.
Simple. I love that. I'm like, straight up. That's a simple way of putting it.
Don't get
offended.
Well.
So yeah, I just had to learn the red flags. That was it. And it's a learning progress. Still troubleshooting some days, but trusting myself was a huge part of it,
and
trusting your intuition. Like, you're an empath, I can feel. So your intuition is always going to be on point. It will always be on point. So just go with that. The first decision you decided on, go with that. Don't go with the second one.
What was the moment that you decided, right, I need to change everything. I need to get out of this, and I need to find a new way of doing that. Like, what was that part?
My son, Malachi. He sent me
the message.
He sent me. That's why I continue. That's my messenger, man. He was the one who was just like, come on. Like, he was just bored. Like, it's amazing. Like, he couldn't even talk. but
he was
but
loud.
Everything was so loud.
Amazing.
It was like loud as daylight. Like, he was so loud. That was a changing point for me in everything that I wanted to do and family support.
Yeah.
Anybody who's going through stuff like that, you have to have someone, maybe they're not family, maybe they're friends, but they're family, friend family kind of thing. That's going to support you. That's going to be like, I've got your back. You don't have to explain to me. When you're ready, I'm here and I'll help you get out. And I think just getting out of toxicness is so important, because you cannot think clearly. You cannot. You're not able to make the right decisions for yourself and the most healthiest decisions for yourself. You need to get out. But I mean, I need to give myself some props here, because I also at the time was seeing a therapist, because I was struggling a lot. I was pregnant. I was unhappy. I was really just trying to get through the day, and I escaped through radio. Radio helped me through, like, radio helped me smile every day, helped me laugh every day. I got to forget, you know, of what was happening at home. And that's my homage to radio. Like, as much as I was there to make other people smile, to make my listeners smile, they were making me smile back. So it was such a beautiful transaction that was happening there. And
I think I bumped into you during probably your, I didn't know what was going on. I still don't know, but yeah. You just came off radio. You had such a great little show. You were smiling and bubbly, and you were leaving Five, and I was in the foyer. I think I was going to meet Metro for some reason. And we had like a 5-minute chat, but I saw already that there was a lot. Your heart was heavy at that time, and you went through a lot. And I saw that, but that's why I have so much. You have so much, like, as a human being, you so much substance. You come out of this stuff like a ninja. I really see you as a ninja. You've become like powerful. Like, to me, you seem so powerful.
But that's what the hardships do. It just depends on how you view them and what you do with them at the end of the day. I'm thankful for the hardships, because I'm thankful that I get to check the red flags. I'm always just like, oh, there comes a narcissist. Everybody, move away.
It's so weird.
Can't do it.
It's so weird, because I identify so strongly. You have no idea.
You know, it's just kind of like,
I mean, when I woke up to all the red flags I was ignoring on planet Earth, it was earth-shattering. And, cool, man.
You know, like, you know, one thing I've got to say, John, is that during the time where I was at my heaviest, like, heaviest heart, you reached out to me, I had a lot of people who wanted to say something, but they were too worried to say something or too scared to say something. And, you know, once it hit the papers or what was happening in my personal life and the attack or whatever, you reached out to me. And I am so thankful for that, because it's a time where you feel very alone, because you're just preparing for the battle of your life. And you really feel very alone. Like, no one, you don't feel like anyone's on your side besides your family, which is always awesome. They will always be on your side, you know. And you reached out and you were like, hey, saw this. I hope you're okay. And that meant the world to me. Not whispering behind my back, not talking about it, but not reaching out. You know, not someone sitting on the fence about something. It's like, you were like, I know this girl. I know her vibe. I need to reach out. I need to check that she's okay. And that meant the world to me because it made it easier. It made the battle easier for me.
Wow. Well, I don't even remember that. So thanks for saying that. But I think I think I do remember because I don't follow the social. I don't know. Like,
yeah,
I don't know what people are. I don't read all the social stuff because I don't want to know. I don't care. Like, I'm interested in the work and what people are doing and who people are. I think I'm remembering now. I was on a flight and there was an article about you either in the newspaper or in the thing. And I remember thinking, this doesn't add up to me what I'm reading here. So that would make sense that I might have just. So cool.
Yeah. Let me ask you two questions
and let you go. Although don't go just yet, because I need to talk to you after we finish this, if you don't mind. I know you're not
No worries. I need to refill anyway at some point.
Do you want to do that now quickly, or because my next question is, I want you to tell me about your mum, because she seems to have come up a lot in this conversation, even like secretly. What is she like? How are you like her, and how are you not like her? You might want to refill for that one, but it's up to you. You can do it. You can.
Okay, you're gonna have to pad here. Pad, talk about something.
Right. I don't call it padding. I call it editing. Just so you know, I don't have to pad. I just pad. This isn't radio, girl.
I'll be back. You'll be able to hear me glug glug glug. Hold on.
That's all good. I'm refilling over here as well.
That's so funny. You don't have to pad. It's called editing. True story. Oh well, my background has been so gut as well, because I didn't even have time to put pot plants in place.
I'll put you in a jungle for the edit. How's that? I'll put you on a desert island or
put me somewhere. Like, and the nice thing is that we talk about it. So yeah, please. Oh, that would be great. I'm like, oh my word, how dodgy. Okay, here we go.
So is your dad in the picture? Is your dad there as well? Is there a dad
no,
in the
world? No, just my mom. So yeah, so it's quite interesting because, gosh, you know what? If you want to know about my family business, go and watch a TED Talk. I did a TED Talk about this. All my family history is there. Okay. It's complicated.
Then you don't have to forget it. I'll look on TED Talk, but you tell me just about your mom then.
Oh, gosh. And that's
because
you've
been living with her for a year now, which is amazing.
Well, yeah, we've been since October, I'd say. We've been here since October, so almost. Well, we're getting there. But just having a village, yesy. Like, when you do this parenting thing, you don't actually realize how important it is to actually have family members around, particularly your parents. If you're fortunate to still have your parents, that is a game changer, because you're not leaving your child with someone you feel guilty about. You know, so that was big for me. As soon as I started going through the crap I was going through, my mom lives in the Eastern Cape, in East London. And she actually has a beautiful B&B here, which she loves, on a little beach town called Ganubi.
And I know Ganubi. Did you grow up in East London?
I did grow up in East London. I grew up, complicated story, but I grew up in Botswana, in England, and in East London. I was a product of an exile situation. But I was also adopted within the family legally, because my mother had me when she was really young, 18. And in order for better opportunities for me, her older sister was studying in the UK. So I moved to the UK with her older sister, and I legally got adopted to her older sister, who later moved to Botswana with her husband.
This is a Netflix series, by the way. Sure, I've just watched this.
Yeah. It sounds like most of the pre-apartheid stories in black families. Like,
no, I've heard a lot of them. This one is a little bit wackier than.
I'm an anomaly, bro. Like, in so many things that I do, the history I come from is I don't speak about it a lot, and I'm thankful I've had that TED talk to be able to talk about it and the impact it's created in my life. Also growing up outside of South Africa is really awesome, because I sometimes can find South Africans very ignorant to the rest of the continent. Oof.
It's weird. It's a weird thing. I don't understand why we don't collaborate with our African brothers and sisters. South Africa is an island. It's very odd to me. We can't see beyond our borders. We're the whole world to ourselves. And it's something that's always confused me.
Yeah, it is. It 100% is. And it's one of the reasons why I want my son to experience life outside of South Africa, on the continent still, on the African continent. But I want him to experience what's out there, because there's this sense of, you know, we are the be all and end all on the African continent, and it is so thinking so small.
Not anymore.
It really is.
We used to be the New York of America, not of Africa. Not anymore. I mean, Nigeria is doing amazing shit. The Tanzanians are just like taking over. Africa's become so hip, and South Africa's still back in the 1980s. Hasn't progressed.
100%. The way in which we think. Yep, I'm there, and I'm very fortunate for those opportunities. But just going back to my mom, I've got two moms technically now, and my biological mother has always been, you know, part of my life. She has always made sure that I am good. I moved to the Eastern Cape and did schooling here to spend more time with her, even though I was in boarding school, and it just gave her some time to build herself, because my grandfather was really, really big on education. I should say my grandparents. They were big on education, and they didn't want anybody to study Bantu education. They didn't want Bantu education. They didn't want a suppressed apartheid system type of education for themselves. So they ensured that all seven of his children studied outside of the country. Seven, yeah, right?
Wow.
My mother being one of them. So they were able to do this through churches, through organizations, through the UN, UNICEF, embassies that were helping the freedom struggle, the Norwegian embassies, you name it. Like, we were that family that were like, how do we smuggle this person out? How do we smuggle that person out? How do we get that person to Australia? How do we get that person to Botswana? And that was how the opportunities came for my family, because education was a core. My great grandparents were educators. So that's my family history. And this is where the entrepreneurship point comes in, and why I believe in education and entrepreneurship, is because it will change somebody's life, literally. Give them the opportunity to do so, they can create an amazing generation for themselves and their families going forward. And that goes particularly for the marginalized, the suppressed, you know, the underprivileged. That for me it's a calling. It's something that my family's been doing it forever, and it just comes and it hits you, and it's like, oh, let's continue with the work.
It's in the blood.
So it's in the blood of why, and that's why it's been so nice to come back to the Eastern Cape and be with my mom, because it just brings me back to the core of who am I, the belonging. And I think it's done a lot of, many people have gone inwards with amidst COVID, of course. And she is just, she's helped me spark my creativity, the ideas that I have. We've just launched something that's so dear to my heart. And I mean, we spoke about the mental health issues I had to deal with coming out of a divorce. I, over the space of 3 years, I kept saying, how do I explain this to my son? How do I do this with my son? Like, how do I?
I didn't think about that. That's not something I've ever thought about.
Oh, it's the only person that's been on my mind. Everything I have done is not only for myself, but for him. And I always think about his mental health and how he can get past this in the world. And I then sat down with one of my Fix Scholar alumni. So, I mean, the Fix Scholarship now, 9 years later, we have over 20 female entrepreneurs who are just rock stars. I mean, these women make me look at my resume and CV and go, I'm not freaking doing enough. I need to do more. And they are great.
How proud you must be just to be able to say, the Fix Scholarship alumni. How great is that? I mean, that is a testament to the legacy you have created. Amazing.
That's impact for me. I need to tell you about my one grandmother if we even have time. But the just that being able to work with, I realized with the Fix Scholarship, yes, the impact of having these amazing female entrepreneurs that make me look like, come on, what are you doing? Do more Fix. Having them on board has been so great because, I mean, we've got our own WhatsApp group. Everybody shares ideas. They're there to, support each other because the whole point is women supporting women business. And once, like, one of the things I realized is I want to do business with all of them because I love every, they've all followed through with what they've been wanting to do. They inspire me. And I'm like, I want the investment for them was not only about just investing in them financially. It was about finding the people that you want to work with. And that clicked during, over the COVID period, like when we were in the heat last year. I was like, holy crap, I want to work with this one. And the timing has just been so great because I'm working on different projects with different people. I've kind of found my tribe. And that's what was happening, which is so cool. Wow. And so now I'm working with Bashira, who is the owner of Diketo Inclusive Education. They focus on early childhood, including everyone, no matter what your special ability might be. And I said to her, I came with an idea after years of therapy. I said to her, Bashira, I want to create a book or do some affirmation cards for my son to just make him know that everything is going to be okay. That is, I don't know how to put these into words when I have to speak about this to him one day. So maybe if I write something for him, it's going to make sense. I'm not an artist, so I can't sing it. I'm thinking of the best ways I can possibly do something. And I was like, and then what's nice is that I don't want to only do it for him. I want to do it for every other child that has gone through any kind of trauma with their parents or with any kind of relationship that they've had I said, cool, can we do affirmation cards? She was like, cool, but let's make it for the African child. Cool, let's make sure we include Braille on it because we want to make it inclusive. Cool, let's make sure that we include different languages so that we get East Africa buying it. So we want Swahili, we want to make sure that we add Botswana. We want to make sure that Botswana is also included. We're like, let's just make it about the African continent and go as far as we can. And that's how we created Affirmations for the African Child, where we sat throughout lockdown creating these beautiful affirmations. I am a proud African. I have a kind soul. I respect the differences of others. I love me. You know, I am grateful for what I have. All these simple things that we need to remind ourselves, as our inner kids as well, our inner children need them. We need to remind ourselves, but what we want our kids to remember as well. And these illustrations are all done by a 13-year-old girl who has said that creating these cards, because we would write the affirmation and go, okay, I think a kid, you know, kicking a ball would be really cool. Or my skin is gorgeous. I think a child with, I think it's called vitiligo, of the skin disease. Let's put an image of her with that. And as our 13-year-old Medea, she's an amazing little girl, was doing all these illustrations, she was saying, "Oh my goodness, this is helping me so much in my life. Imagine what the impact for other people." And that's the idea of these cards. So we just launched that last month. It's my project dedication to my son. And I can't wait to, you know, like, go check it out. It's africanaffirmations.org. That is our website. And yeah, the cards are flying. So yeah. Africanaffirmations.org. Amazing. That is something that it's so close to my heart, and I absolutely love it.
Glowing after that.
Oh yeah.
Hold on, I have to just write this into my browser so I don't forget. Affirmations.org. Thank you. Better than writing. I can't read my own handwriting, so this is better.
No worries. That's what
I've spent affirmations wrong. That's embarrassing. Got it. Amazing, Fixie. Amazing. I mean, you're blowing my mind. I realize how late it is, so I want to ask you one. These are the two questions I'll prepare your brain for. One, tell me about the grandmother story that you wanted to tell me. And my last question will be, what's next for Fixie? But start with grandmama story.
Okay. And I hope I said enough about my mother, by the way, because she's just my rock.
You say a lot about the person that you are. The stuff you have even said this evening, I think your mother... You've said a lot about her through you. That's been very clear.
And I think also just going into my grandmother from here is that I come from a matriarchy of amazing Xhosa women. When I speak of my mother, I think I speak about all of them. It's like saying ancestors for me. It's not only my mother. I'm talking about all of them as a collective, because that's the Ubuntu that they've always created for us. That's the love that they've always created for us. These women who are just like, "Dadam, you can do it. Go for it. We're here. We support your dreams. Your dreams are valid." And they continue to do. Those are the affirmations they sent to us and sent to me consistently. So the affirmations from my gran, the big inspiration behind the Fix Scholarship and a lot of the core of who I am is I've got three very important grandmothers in my life. Or should I say I had. My one grandmother was an educator in a village called Amakwe in the Eastern Cape. She knew that teaching English to Black children was important for them to gain opportunity worldwide, or even just outside of the Eastern Cape, if they really wanted to excel. And so she started, even before she started, she was teaching English at a school, and then she retired. They actually told her to retire, and she wasn't even ready to retire. But then,
how old was she?
Oh, when she retired, I think she must have been...
No, when they asked her to retire.
When they asked her to, was between her 50s and 60s.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So she wasn't that old. And she tried to hold on as much as she can, but they were like, "It's time for you to retire." And then what she did was she started doing extra lessons. Actually, the one child came up, the one parent was like, please can you do extra English lessons? You've been the best English teacher that we've had. And can we continue on? So she did one English lesson. All of a sudden, there was another child. All of a sudden, there was another child. And then the next day, assembly was happening in our back garden. And a school was created.
And that's so weird school. Because in a weird way, that's exactly what you're doing in your life. You're creating a school assembly in your back garden just through different iterations. Amazing.
That's it. That's it. That's how small she began. And she just thought, day by day, we'll just keep growing it. And then, you know what? Let's use one of the bedrooms here as a classroom. And then all of a sudden they're building outside because it's gained so much traction. And now Kwasa English Medium is a full-on, the first private school, may I add, the first private English school that started in the Eastern Cape, in Ngamakwe. And she thrived. She did so well with it. And, I mean, this is someone who was supposed to retire. So, you know, those are the shoes that need to be filled. That's the one grandmother. Second grandmother, she was one of the first Black female doctors in South Africa. She was studying, she was really great. Her grades were awesome in the Eastern Cape. And one day her teacher was like, I need you to really think about your future. I think you could be an amazing doctor. So my grandmother was like, oh, okay, finishing high school. She was like, okay, maybe, but I mean, we wouldn't be able to afford it. And some Scottish lady invested in her, was like, listen, I think you've got so much potential. Invested in her, and she became one of the first Black female doctors in the country. She couldn't, that's where she met my grandfather in Joburg, where she was studying at Wits. And once they were both studying medicine, and once they graduated, obviously they wanted to start practicing, but she couldn't practice in South Africa as a Black female. So they started looking for jobs outside of South Africa. And they ended up in Botswana because it was the only place that would accept them to practice together as, you know, as a Black family. And that's how a part of my family ended up in Botswana and a Botswana citizens, because the country accepted them. And my grandmother and my grandfather went on to open up a surgery that fresh, may I add, this is so strange, that Fresh and his family all went to that surgery because Fresh is from Botswana.
Were you born in Botswana too?
No, I was born in South Africa. And then I moved to Botswana a little bit later in my life. But it, you know, like, you know, it all comes like full circle. And I mean, they were personal doctors to the president. So every time the queen had great relations with Botswana, you know, so being Commonwealth and all. So if she needed to help the queen out, she would help the queen out. So she literally went from.
See, all your magic makes sense to me now. Like, this story has been very enlightening to understand why you are who you are and why you do what you do. It's amazing. I'm so happy we got to have this chat.
Yeah. Incredible. No, if anybody has an opportunity, I think the best way to explain it is, like, if you have an opportunity to watch my TED talk, because you get to really see the images as well, which I present as well. The matriarch is awesome. Yeah. The matriarch
I'll put
is
a link
intense.
Into it. I'm keen.
Thank you. And then your last question?
The last question is, what, you know, you've done 8 years on Five. You, you know, you have a very, very powerful matriarchal family, and now you have a son to raise. Ooh, inside that. Where next for you? And then I'll almost let you go. Then I'm going to pretend. Then I'm going to say goodbye, and then you're not going to hang up because I need you for another.
But not really. That's fine. I've been getting this question a lot. I've had a long time to think about it. 3 years, actually. I've been thinking about what next after radio. And it's definitely fixed scholarship is going to continue. I've never been able to really branch out and do more with the fixed scholarship and open up my services because I didn't have the time.
In a second.
Yeah, fantastic. So I want to open up the services there because I can see the fixed scholarship becoming an institution. I think we're too traditional in the way our education system runs, and there needs to be change. There needs to be a lot of change that happens. And then secondly, needing more entrepreneurship on that note as well. I something that I did a lot of that I did, I don't know why I didn't mention it because it's become a huge core of mine, is I've become a yoga instructor.
Oh, yes, I follow you on Instagram. I did know that. I forgot to bring it up as well.
I think it's just so part of my personality now that I just know that I need it in my life in order to stay mindful with everything I do. As soon as the core of the mindfulness is there, everything just happens and it opens up like a beautiful sunflower. So I need to make sure that I've got that hold. So I'm doing a lot of hot yoga because I think it's not only healing for myself, but it's healing for others. And I love that practice. And that's about sharing the practice. And a lot of entrepreneurship as well. Actually, just personal growth, no matter what you do, has to come from a sound and mindful mind, you know. So it's all part of the growth aspect. So that's something that I've been doing part-time and I'm loving. And then, of course, launching our affirmation cards has been a huge highlight for me. So those are the things I'm currently working on right now. I want to build the fixed scholarship. That's me. That's me at this stage. And just I wanted to live by the ocean. This is also another thing about working in Johannesburg. I'm just talking about the goals in my life. I knew that I surfed a lot, John. I love surfing because as soon as I moved here, I was like, okay, I'm getting a wetsuit, bought a wetsuit.
That's why I moved to Cape Town. Hello. That's why I couldn't stay there. There was two things that did it. One, the surfing, and two, I knew I was going to have a kid and I didn't want to have it in Joburg and live there. I wanted to be by the sea. So by the way,
we
are very similar, except you are way more amazing.
No. Stop. So yeah, so those are my two things. I'm trying to keep it simple and just keep checking out our stuff. We'll continue to bring more of this kind of stuff. I've loved radio. I miss radio. But I think I'm done. I'm done with the radio world. Podcasting though is something I will definitely look into. But yeah,
if you want to talk about that, then I'm your guy on that as well.
I know. I'm not ready just yet. I want to give myself some time, but I will definitely be podcasting. I've got some things that I want to share without having any mandates. Yeah.
I've just any ordered SABC mandates. Your affirmation cards.
Oh.
There we go. Done. Fixie,
thank you for the support.
You are one special human being. I love that I know you. I feel so privileged that I know you. Every time I've spent 1 minute with you has been extremely memorable. We used to go sit in that little coffee shop in Melville next to Open Room Studios and plot the future of the world. And I'm hoping that maybe this random conversation, I mean, my thing of this show is I have there's no like objective here. There's no research done. Obviously, the idea is I want to do a show where I drink whiskey or with people that I really love and want to know more about, and just do it and put it out into the world. So, I really wanted to talk to you for the longest time. I thought maybe your Well, actually, I was talking to you, trying to get you on here long before the 5FM debacle. So that kind of all made it newsworthy. But I love that you've spent time chatting, and I think we're going to do some stuff together, and I really hope we do. I think you are so powerful. I think what you've, how you've handled yourself through such a difficult time has been incredible, and I love you lots, and whatever happens to you, you're going to be amazing. I know you know that. You don't even need to tell you. So it sounds condescending, but it's not intended to sound that way.
Not at all. And John, thank you. Thank you for giving me the platform to share, laugh, and drink wine. I'm sorry that I fell asleep and woke up. I'm glad I woke up.
I've had a couple of experiences where the person did wake up, so I was appreciative that you did.
I really apologize. That's just mamahood, where your bedtime is when your child goes to sleep.
But
one thing about you talking about the research, you've done the research. All those coffee shop conversations we had, all those meetings in the passageways of the SABC, in the receptions, in the studios, that was all the research, homie. That was all
Choose
the
Bob.
Research.
Choose Bob. Love your work, and I wish you a fair good night, and thanks for staying up for me. Cheers to you, you legend, Fixed Moiety.
Cheers to you, John Savage.
Hope you enjoyed that episode. This is John Savage. Go to johnsavage.com/whatchyourpoison. Sign up to the newsletter, or subscribe to any of these things. Really loved having you there. Give me feedback. You got ideas for guests, send them to me. Just go to the website, and heareth endeth the lesson.